This is the Utah Politics Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Brian Schott, political correspondent with the Salt Lake Tribune. The once-a-decade redistricting process is barreling to an end as both the legislative and independent redistricting committees are finishing up their public meetings around the state, considering public input for what Utah's new political boundaries for the next decade should look like. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk about map drawing with Rex Facer. He's the chair of Utah's Independent Redistricting Commission. He has some interesting thoughts about being the head of the very first independent map drawing body in the state's history. They will present their map proposals to the Utah legislature on November 1st. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Professor Rex Facer. He's a return guest. He is the chairman of the Independent Utah Redistricting Commission. We talked to him before they started the process or right at the beginning of the process. Now we're getting close to the end of the process as we've had this several month sprint to come up with new maps for the state. Professor Facer, thank you so much for joining me. I've been really looking forward to having an opportunity to chat with you again.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you and to take a few minutes away from drawing maps.
Yeah, and there are a lot of maps on your website. I was really interested to dig in through some of the proposals, and we'll talk about some of the reasoning and some of what you came up with in just a minute. But we are getting close to the end of your process. You have six public meetings left, and then you will present your maps to the Legislative Redistricting Committee on November 1st. How has this process gone for you? You're literally the first to go through this. So you had to forge your own way. But how has this process been?
It's been very positive so far. It has been, I think, much more exacting than many of the members of the commission thought it might have been, both in terms of the kind of level of engagement and transparency that we've gone through, because we've tried to do some things very differently than most states have done it in ways of trying to be extremely transparent, but also just the logistics of managing drawing maps. It has been very positive seeing that we've divided up into three map drawing teams. And so on each team, we have people appointed by Republicans and Democrats, and those teams have worked together terrifically. And so that's one of the things we're very proud of. But it has been incredible the amount of time that people have put into it. And it's been quite amazing to watch, in all honesty.
The your legislative counterparts who are doing a parallel process, there are so many more of them on this than your group. So I can't even imagine the hours and just the effort gone in to drawing these maps. And we'll get down to those in just a second. But, it's probably too early to ask you to reflect on the process, but are there things that you've been that you've come across and you said, man, I wish we would have done that a little bit differently? Are there things that you wish you had another whack?
Well, I think, some of the things that we wish we had another whack at are how we figure out how to reach out to people across the state. I think that's been a challenge in trying to get people interested and engaged. I think we've tried to do some interesting things, but I think that's one of the places where if we had a chance to redo it, that we might try and find some more creative ways to do some of those things. But overall, we've been really happy with the way things have gone.
Anything that, okay, so things that you've been happy, give me some of your, I guess, wins so far. And I know that that's really hard to do, and you teach business down at BYU, so it's kind of hard to look at it when you're in the middle of it. But, things that you thought have really added to the process or have been a win for you along on first blush.
Well, I think one of the wins that we had is the very early preparation that we went through in terms of bringing experts in, making sure the commission was well versed in redistricting issues. I think that was a major win for us, because by the time it came to drawing maps, we were all very comfortable with kind of conceptually the kinds of things that were going on. I think another win that we've had is we've had to be creative because of the amount of resources that we've had with our map drawing. And so we've had a team of interns and volunteers that have helped us in the map drawing. And I think that's actually been a great win because we've been able to do it when there were a lot of people who doubted we'd be able to pull this off. And we really have pulled it off quite well. I think in terms of it, not only being able to produce maps, but being able to sit down and work together. I think probably the biggest win has been the collegiality and cooperation that we've seen among the commission members. We really have worked together well, and especially in these little map drawing teams where you've got two or three people working together. We haven't had partisan bickering. We've had people who are focused on the task at hand, and that's trying to draw fair maps, ones that allow the people of Utah to be represented well. I think that's another one of our really big wins.
So I'm looking on your website at your draft congressional maps, and it looks like there are six total from your group, and then there's a couple of public submissions. Well, I've noticed that out of the six, and I'm guessing green team is one team that's done a map, and then you have the purple team, and then the orange. Notice that you haven't done red or blue, which I think is keeping with the nonpartisan theme of things.
That is correct.
But one thing that struck me is out of those six congressional map proposals, only two of them have what you see a lot of Democrats and a few independents calling for, which is sort of a donut hole for Salt Lake City. It's not essentially a donut hole, but putting Salt Lake City in its own congressional district. Only two of the six have those. How hard was it to, talk me through some of the reasoning that you had on your maps about how you decided where to put the most populous areas of the state, Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City, Utah County. A couple of maps have Utah County in its entirely own congressional district, which I think is probably the more likely scenario if any county is going to get its own seat.
Yeah. So let me talk about a map that we just finished today. So it's actually not up on the website yet, but will be here shortly. And in that map, we have Salt Lake County split into two, which it has to be split into at least two. There are some of the maps that split it into three. I think there might even be one that splits it into at least four. And then the public submissions are kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
But one of the things is we did that. We have two of those districts that we did were largely, we had one that was largely Salt Lake County and more northern Salt Lake County. It snuck up into Davis County. The other one was southern Salt Lake County sneaking down into Utah County. And then what we've called the third congressional district would be from about Orem south, and then kind of blanketing the rest of the state. And part of what was going on in our mind was trying to think about the logistics of being a representative, in addition to trying to take into account a lot of the public input that we'd heard. So one of the early maps that we drew that we were quite pleased with ourselves had, as a matter of fact, it's Purple 3. And when we went down and had our public hearing down in Washington County and then in Ephraim, we got some real pushback in Cedar City. We got some real pushback from the public on those maps because they said, we really don't want to be with Salt Lake. And so we then went back to the drawing board and said, okay, let's not put Southern Utah with Salt Lake, and let's then put them with Utah County. But the challenge that we have is that the rural part of the state is so sparsely populated that those districts have to be really big.
Yeah.
So there are some of the folks that have drawn maps. I don't know that we have any on the commission that have done it, but they've drawn a giant donut that has kind of three holes in the middle, and then a district that encompasses the whole outer ring of the state. You've got to go from the very far northwestern corner of the state down to the very far southeastern corner of the state. And the logistics of managing that, we thought, was just really, really difficult. But even doing that, you still have a population core in Logan and a population core in St. George that are facing very different kind of urban kinds of issues than the rest of the rural state, rural parts of the state. And so even when you try and have a rural centered district, it's really difficult to do that. And so we ended up splitting it. So you've got a northern district that has a fair amount of rural in it, a southern district that has a fair amount of rural in it, and then the two districts in the middle that have more more urban kind of cores. But I think the thing to note about these maps is the purpose of the maps. So we haven't decided on which of the maps that the commission has drawn are moving forward yet.
Yeah.
We're getting closer.
You have to do three of each map, right?
Or that's up, right. That's right.
Up of each map.
Well, we actually have to deliver three.
Oh, okay.
And so at least that's our reading of the statute. But what the maps have done is they've allowed us to have productive conversations, both with the public as well as with ourselves. And it's allowed us to start seeing what happens when you start doing things. And so when Commissioner Hale and I were the purple map drawing team, when we were sitting down this morning, we went back through, we were revisiting the boundaries, trying to see. And most of the boundaries that we used were city limit boundaries, not exclusively, because there were a couple of times where we had to split some cities. But we tried to minimize splitting cities, yet following the large set of criteria that we have. And so this process is just, it's really interesting. And I have found it quite engaging in terms of working with Commissioner Hale and then coming back to the group and trying to argue, here's why we did what we did. And does that make sense to any of the rest of you?
I want to come back to that because you make an interesting point, and I had a thought about a question. But as I look at these maps, it seems like the commonality, or at least one of the commonalities, when Salt Lake County is divided into two, it's usually somewhere down around Sandy or Draper. That is where the dividing line essentially happens on a lot of these maps, and then that is combined in with the northern part of Utah County down Provo and Orem along those lines. And that seems to make sense. Are you surprised that these independent groups are essentially coming up with almost the same border in that area, the state?
I'm not really surprised. And one of the things is when you start looking at the way the population is dispersed, in part because of the way our cities are bounded, it just kind of naturally moves to that part of Salt Lake County. At one point, we thought, well, let's try and draw an east-west dividing line. And we found that to be much harder, in partly because of the way the city boundaries go. There just aren't clean lines that way. And there are a little bit more clean lines on that north-south divide.
I think that makes sense. A lot of these districts, some of them remind me of when Utah only had three congressional seats. And in 2001, during that redistricting cycle, Jim Matheson had Avenues area of Salt Lake City, and then that went all the way to the eastern part of the state, and then all the way down to St. George. So those large districts have happened before. I think his seat actually was larger than the state of Alabama, just in terms of area size. So, but I hear the discussions about the logistics of making this work, and on that. Members of the legislative committee, I assume they're having similar discussions, but they're not privy to the sort of in-depth discussions, or at least they're not a part of it. And I'm wondering if something you might advise for the next time around is to establish some sort of liaison who's a member who kind of goes back and forth between your committee and the legislative committee to kind of make sure that they get a more in-depth look at your thought process, because you've been doing this for months and there's probably a lot of things that have happened in your small map drawing sessions that would be very valuable for at least your legislative counterparts to take away. So I'm wondering if that's something that thought about.
Well, I haven't thought a lot about that. And one of the reasons I haven't is because if they would like to watch any of our map drawing sessions, sure, they're available on our YouTube channel. That is one of the things that we've done very differently from, I think, anybody else in the country. We've been broadcasting these map drawing sessions that we have. And so and we've had people go back and review those. There have been a couple of times where we went back and have reviewed, what was it that we were talking about back then? But I think you do raise an interesting question, and that is, fundamentally, what's the role and the relationship between the legislature's committee and the independent committee? And the way we were structured this time and the way that the legislature really kind of wanted to emphasize was the independence and lack of engagement across the two groups until the very end, until we present those maps. Mm-hmm. What I hope is that there are members of the committee that are looking, just like we have members of the public looking at the maps that we put online. And as we start refining those in the next, I'm going to guess that by early next week, we'll have a preliminary set of at least some of the maps. Now, they won't be final because we're taking public input up through the 23rd. But we'll have a preliminary set of maps that give a pretty good idea of some of the direction that the commission is going on its maps. And I would hope that members of the legislative committee start looking at those maps now. I hope they don't wait to start thinking about, well, what have the independent commission been doing? Because we really have been not only trying to be very thoughtful about this process, but trying to be very responsive to the public input that we have been hearing, both in terms of the written comments that we've gotten in, as well as the public comments we've gotten in our public meetings.
Okay, so I'm going to put on my hard-boiled cynic hat here. How much of your process do you think that the legislature is going to adopt? They're going to do any of this, or is it going to be more of, as many expect, a sort of pat on the head, nice job, and now we're going to go do our thing? You did your part, and everybody can feel good about that. Now the real work begins. Because, part of me hopes that that's not the way it works, because you've been so much time, and there have been state resources poured into this, so one would hope that that would not be dismissed out of hand. But I've covered, I know how this works, right? This is my third redistricting cycle, albeit the first one with an independent commission, but I understand how this thing works, and I understand how your group was during the creation process up on.
I guess one of the responses that I have to that is, one of the things that I've sometimes heard some members of the legislature say was, well, the independent commission, it barely passed, right? Well, the answer is it passed. And in our system of government, when it passes, we use it. And so my hope and my expectation is that they're going to use what we deliver and that it's going to change the shape of the conversations that they have. Now, are there times where I worry? Because I don't want the good people that have been working with me to have been wasting their time for the last 7-8 months. Because we have some very capable, some very significant people on the commission. And to think that you've had people like Christine Durham and people like Rob Bishop in the room for hours and hours, and you're ignoring them, I think not only does a disservice to the state, but it does a disservice to the people that the leadership of the legislature chose to be on the commission. And so my hope is, and my expectation is, that they will pay attention to this. Now, I will say that part of that hope is driven by a need to have some optimism in this process, because it is easy to become cynical at the way things go. And it's not just Utah, right? I mean, this happens in legislatures across the country where you worry that all of the decisions are made back behind closed doors. And what we've tried to do in the independent commission is we've tried to open those doors up so people could watch the process going on.
In those public sessions or people watching this, has any of the feedback from people who have watched it from the outside, have paid attention to what you're doing, has any of that surprised you, any of the feedback or the input that they've given you? Because, I mean, as you said, this is an unprecedented way to go about this. I cannot imagine the legislature just sitting down in open and hashing out a map. That just seems like that's, in my fever dreams, yeah, that would happen and I'd get to watch that whole thing. But in reality, that ain't going to happen.
Well, the thing that does make it nice is that we're not considering who's running or who's right. Not running. right? And so not having that politics piece allows us to focus on the people. Now, in terms of things that have surprised me, what has surprised me, and it shouldn't surprise me, but it's all of the nuances that we don't know about places. When somebody raises something, it's easy for those light bulbs to go off. We were down in Mexican water, down in the very southeastern corner of the state last week. And as we were talking with folks, one of the things that came up is, we were talking about some of the tribal lands across the state. And in a few of the maps that we have, the way the counties are laid out splits part of the Ute tribal lands. And somebody talked about the sense among the tribes is if you split their lands, you have really kind of split who they are. And I wouldn't have known that had it not been for that public engagement. And so, we went back and we now have a carve out of a county to try and keep the Ute tribal lands together in a district instead of splitting them up, even though that's splitting a county. We're trying to be responsive to that feedback that we've heard that we would have never known had we not had that kind of public engagement with communities that often aren't heard very loudly.
Speaking of counties, this will be the last thing that I ask you, but it's something that jumped into my mind. As you look at those different counties, I think it's Daggett that only has 2,000 people in a county. How hard was it to at least draw maps to their interests so that they weren't diluted? Because there's no way the Daggett County can have, a seat that 100% focuses on Daggett County. And they don't want to be combined with other counties, but they have to be simply because of the population number. So how hard was it to take an example like that, where there's only 2,000 people in an entire county, and at least consider what their needs are balanced against needs of larger areas?
I think it's a real challenge, and one that am I certain we have the best answer? I don't know, because there are kind of different strains of thoughts about trying to concentrate the rural voice so that it's able to speak as a larger portion. There are other folks who say, let's divide up the rural voice so everybody hears some of it. But at the end of the day, for me, hearing those folks in the rural counties say, we want to make sure we're heard, was really important. It did cause me to reflect a little bit differently. And so that's why, at least when we drew our maps, we were perhaps more willing than some other folks to try and have a group that had a slightly larger share of rural folks, because we wanted those rural folks to have the chance to amplify their voices a little bit more. But at the end of the day, Daggett County represents such a small portion of the state, it's easy for them to get lost. And the only way for them to not get lost is to have representatives who care. One of the things that we heard loud and clear when we were out in the rural areas is they notice whether it's a member of Congress or a member of the state house, they notice when they care, because they then come to their community. And that's an important. So as important as it is to get the districts right, it's just as important for the voters to be able to choose somebody that commits to representing who they are.
I think we'll leave it there. Professor Rex Facer, chairman of the Independent Redistricting Commission, thank you so much for your time. It's been a fascinating discussion. And let's just plan on talking when this whole thing is over with, to try, because then you'll have a chance to have really reflected on the whole thing.
That sounds great. It'd be my pleasure, Brian.
My thanks to Rex Facer. He is the chairman of Utah's Independent Redistricting Commission. Thank you for listening today. If you haven't done it already, if you could leave us a rating and review for this podcast, that would certainly help out a lot. It helps new people find the show. Just go to Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, iTunes, wherever you can, to leave that rating and review. That would be much appreciated. If you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, you can do that as well. Just hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Once again, thanks for listening. We'll be back with another episode soon. I'm Brian Schott.